My name is Romola Hodes. I'm a public speaker. I'm an author. My book has just been published, The Princess of 42nd Street, Surviving My Childhood as the Daughter of Times Square's King of Porn. And I am speaking with Rabbi Saul Solomon on Dave's Gone By. Happy Hanukkah, everyone.
Oh, shalom, my friends. Shalom, my enemies. This is your old pal, Rabbi Saul Solomon, founder and spiritual leader of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. And, you know, I love getting on this radio program, Dave's Gone By, and talking to people who deal with things that I love, like music and theater and literature and, today, even better, pornography. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, here is someone who did not make pornography, but grew up in a world of it, and also, oh my God, she suffered terrible abuse, mental abuse from her parents. She has a story to tell. Hopefully, there will be funny things intersprinkled in there, or else we're all going to cut our wrists in 20 minutes. But until then, please join me in welcoming to the neighborhood a public speaker and the author of a new book called The Princess of 42nd Street, put out by Riverdale Avenue Press. It's all about her life growing up as the daughter of the King of Porn on 42nd Street. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Romola Hodes. Shalom, Romola.
Hello there. You should be my manager.
I know I should be. I don't know if anybody can manage you, because you're kind of a tough chick. You had to learn to be tough in this world. Is this true?
Yes. I chose to learn to be tough in this world. You know, it was a conscious decision.
Well, all my decisions are basically unconscious and filtered through me through Hashem. But we'll talk about that. Let's talk first about you. You've written a memoir, and it's a memoir of where a lot of negative and bad things happened to you. So the first question is, before we get into what they were, was it cathartic writing this book? Was it painful? Or was it, did you almost go outside your body like a novelist writing about somebody else?
This was one of the hardest things I've ever done, and I never realized it was going to be so hard.
That's what she said.
No, when I was younger, I was kind of like detached, because when you're going through a lot of trauma, you're kind of detached from your feelings a lot. So now I'm more healed, and writing the book was very, very hard going over all that stuff. So, no. And lots of people asked me that question, and no, it wasn't cathartic. It was hard.
I mean, even finishing it, you did not feel a sense of, aha, now I can really put my early life behind me? You know, because everybody thinks, oh, well, you've written the book, and then you said the end, it's published, it's out there, and you feel great. And a lot of people tell me, no, it's still a process.
Well, I've been in and out of therapy since I'm like 13. You know, I worked through a lot of this stuff, and I, you know, went to courses and did a lot of stuff to learn to forgive my parents and whatnot. So writing this book was just dredging up all that stuff again, but I did want people to know who made 42nd Street. You know, I wanted people to know that history, and I also wanted people to know that I made a conscious decision to be happy in this life, and that's kind of like my message. It just doesn't so much easy to be miserable. You don't have to do anything.
Well, you are Jewish. You are. Okay. I am Jewish. It's so easy to be miserable. I can't tell you.
Yeah. Right. It takes some effort to figure out who you want to be, what kind of character you want, who, you know, and then create that for yourself. It's hard. You know, it's challenging, but I wouldn't have it any other way. So writing this book, it's not over. I'm out there now doing public speaking, doing interviews, so it's far from over.
That's true. Now, let's roll it back. Let's actually tell the story of the book, and we'll start with 42nd Street itself, which people look at it now, you can't move. There's tourists everywhere. There's every other block is a Starbucks. It's like, ah. But back in the day, in the 60s and 70s, it was a sewer. Acute sewer, but it was still, everything was X-rated theater, it was junkies, it was prostitutes on the street, you know, basically like Newark on a Saturday night. So your dad was not only entrenched in all this, but he was, as they say, the king of all this. So tell the story basically of your father going from a guy collecting pennies to the king.
Okay, so Dad had a pinball, jukebox, and cigarette machine route. And he had some of those cigarette machines in a few stores on 42nd Street. So when he was coming back from New Jersey on his route, he had to go to the bathroom, and he stopped at an arcade. And downstairs in the bathroom, where the bathroom was, there was 15 old peep show machines that you put, like, Popeye in. You know, they were, like, kind of as big as a small refrigerator, and you'd put your eyes up to it like you were looking through a, what are those, binoculars, kind of.
Yeah.
So he said, oh, my God, what happens if I take those machines and put, like, girly movies in there? He bought the machines, and he got some films, and he went around 42nd Street, and everybody said to him, don't you think if this was legal, it would be happening? So my father went to find out. He got a lawyer and whatnot, and lo and behold, you did not need a license to have girly show movies in these bookstores. So I'll never forget, the first store was 259 West 42nd Street. Dad put two of those things in there, and at the end of the night, he gets a call, Marty, the machines are broken, they can't put any more quarters in it, you have to come down. So my father goes into the city, takes all the quarters out, and, you know, he comes home and he's like, there were like 200 people in line waiting to see. I'm sure there was like, you know, 20, my dad. But, you know, so that's really how it started with those two machines. And then, you know, the rest of the street or whatever started. They took the rest of the 15 machines. My dad called the arcade and said, I want more. The arcade man said they don't make them. Dad looked on the back of the machine to see the manufacturer, called the manufacturer. I can't remember if it's Kentucky or Tennessee. The guy said, I don't make them anymore. He said, I want 50. He goes, when do you want them? And my father, you know, went to Kentucky or Tennessee, I can't forget, and brought back, you know, the 50 machines.
And he sprinkled them all over town.
On the whole, that's how it happened.
Yeah. Now, this makes your dad sound like a real plucky American success story entrepreneur. You know, going from these vending machines to jukeboxes and then to, all right, peep show, girly show things. Makes him sound like, oh, boy, you know, if you don't mind the sex aspect of it, he sounds like someone to admire. And to an extent, for a period of your growing up, you loved him beyond anything, and he was the sweetest dad around. And then you hit puberty.
Yeah. First of all, my father kind of was a success story. You know, not only did he do the peep shows, but then he invented a better, a better area to watch the peep show. It was like a closet. You could go in and have privacy. Then he invented the live sex acts and the dancing girls. And then he started to do his own movie. So he was a big conglomerate, you know. And yes, for the first 8 years of my life, my father was like my hero. And my mother was a genius artist and musician, but she was also bipolar and personality disorder and violent and mean and frightening. And, you know, Dad used to protect me from certain things, like when she wanted me beaten because I didn't listen to her. He would, like, take me upstairs and take off his belt and, like, you know, hit my bed, scream, you know. Taught me how to fly. Me and my sister would lie on our bellies. You know, practice, put your hands up, you're going to be flying soon. You know, he was great. And then when I turned 8, I remember this day like yesterday. I was 8 years old, and I was going to school, and I was wearing a dress. And he looks up at me, and he goes, how do you walk out of the house? And this was before he was in that industry, okay?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, this was before that, you know, because So, and he goes, how do you walk out of the house looking like you do? And I'm like, what? He goes, look at your fat ass. You must be the fattest girl in school. And I was like, what, Daddy? Don't you tell me. You're not the fattest. You've got to be the fattest girl. And I ran out of the house saying, fat ass? What does he mean? you know. And from then on, he would, you know, come home on certain nights and chase me around the house, pick me up like a sack of potatoes, put me on a scale that he kept by the table where we ate. If I gained any weight, he would beat me up, make me sit at the table.
He would physically
beat up the table, wash the dishes, go up to bed without food.
Did he physically beat you up, or was it just verbally?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. You know, at least, you know, at some point that kind of stopped, because I would fight him.
Mm.
Say, what are you, crazy? You know, but at some point, you know, maybe like 3 years later, you know, but he was very, very, you know, he called me Fat Molly. He never called me Romola. And he, you know, you were always like, what are you, an imbecilic moron? How could you be so stupid? You know, it was constant criticizing and degradation. If I'd bring home, you know, a report card with A's on it, he'd throw it at me. What do you think, you're better than other people? And he was unfortunately crazy, just like my mother. You know,
I had to protect the
kids, you know, my two younger sisters and brother from my mother and father.
But at what point, you said
go
when you were 8 years old, it's something, I mean, can you pinpoint what made him mentally, or was it drugs at that point? What changed his personality?
I don't know. I think that my father had his own issues with weight. And I think that he just put that all out on me for some reason. You know, my father, you know, to be in the business that my father was in, dealing with mobsters and making pornography and drugs and everything, you have to be a bit psychotic. You have to be able to shut off whatever you don't want to deal with. Mm-hmm. And my father could do that, and he was also, you know.
And he was married to a crazy
lady. I guess got a little chubby, and yeah. He was freaking out. And, you know, I remember when I was about 13, and we were having, it was Hanukkah or Thanksgiving, I don't remember which one, and my father and I were sitting at the dining room table. He asked me some question. He goes, boy, you really have a low self-esteem. And I just was like, what the F do you think after you doing bop at your baby? And he was like, oh, I thought I was helping you.
Oh, good God.
He said, that's how you thought you were helping me, by beating me up and not letting me call me? So he was nuts. My father was nuts. And he was also the life of the party. And everybody loved him. And he was, you know, but he was nuts.
Now, here's kind of an interesting, happier sort of a thing, is that you're talking about being the life of the party and having guests and friends and a big, very beautiful house. He, at this point, was living very, very close to where the producer of this Facebookio program of the stream, Dave, has lived. Because Dave used to live in Hewlett, Long Island. And your dad, he was in Malvern and then in Lawrence.
Yes.
Of all things, in beautiful Jewish Lawrence, Long Island. And he would not only give these lavish parties in an early version of a McMansion, but he'd have orgies there, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. And that was one thing. It's like, you want to live that life and you're an adult? Okay. But why have your four children home watching, you know, waitresses breastfeeding kittens and people snorting cocaine and running all over the house nude and, you know, people having sex in my brother's bed? I'm like, why? You know, and that's when I really started to develop some hate for my parents. It's like, you're that insane? You're that nuts that you don't know? Oh, you know, we're going to have this party. We better get the kids out of the house.
Was there ever a point when you went to a next-door neighbor and said, help, or I need to get out of here, or call a cop, or you know, not basically from the parties,
next
but when he's being abusive?
Neighbor was at the party.
Yeah. Huh.
You know? And, you know, yeah, and it was, you know, you're a young kid, so you're like, it's all topsy-turvy. It's like, aren't these people supposed to be protecting me? I'm the adult in the house. You know, it was like very, it was hard. It was hard those years because I, you know, were they that insane that they didn't realize what they were doing? Evidently, what parent would do that? You want to go do that? You know, I remember that, you know, I don't remember. I always forget the name of all these famous porno guys. That one really, Jeremy,
Ron Jeremy. Jewish, by the way. Ron Jeremy, Jew.
I know. And they would be coming to my house.
Literally.
And they would be, like, doing all this stuff to entertain my parents' friends. And I remember one time I was outside, and there were, like, two couples doing all, and I started to walk to them, because my mother was standing there at the other side of the pool in shock. She just didn't, you know, she didn't, and I looked at her, and I started to go over to them, and I was going to say, get the F out of my mother's house, and one of my parents' friends came over to me and said, Romola, and I said, I don't want to say, you know, Mrs. Leibowitz, do you see my mother? Romola, go in the house. You know your father. How is it, Romola, you shouldn't be here. Go in the house. And I remember going and sitting on the staircase saying, this is my life? This is my life that I have to, you know, see all this? It was, and then finding out, you know, when I wrote my book, you know, I was talking to some of my siblings, and I thought I did a good job of shielding them. You know, when I said to my sister, Risa, do you remember? She goes, oh, yeah, I remember the kitten was black. I'm like, oh, my God, you saw that. And my brother would see all these things. My brother was like 7, 8 years old to be seeing all this stuff.
Now, did it see, at the point where I've been reading, I haven't had a chance to finish the book, even though it's a hell of a page-turner. But I've been reading, and I haven't gotten to the point of, did it, you and your brother and your sister, did it mess you up sexually? Because it seems like you had a pretty normal sex life and romantic sort of life.
I did.
How?
How
does that not fuck you up?
Yeah. I'll tell you, because, and you know, I know with my younger sister, it messed her up. And anyway, my mother, when they first moved to Lawrence, I think the first 2 years before all the crazy parties started, my and her illness was a little better because, you know, here she had this big house, this big mansion, she was decorating, you know, she was in a mad, or she was, you know, mostly happy. So Wednesday nights, my mother and father would have a party amongst themselves in the big den. And my mother would come down in her Frederick's peignoir and her fluffy slippers and her nails done and her, you know, her Barbara Eden wig and smelling of taboo perfume. And my mom and dad would play Scrabble. And they would play strip Scrabble.
I didn't realize it was strip Scrabble. I thought it was just regular Scrabble with Hebrew tiles or something. Oh, no, okay.
Yeah. So always they had vodka and caviar. And, you know, my mother was very open about, you know, sexy was fine and sex is wonderful, but you need to love someone. You know, the first man that I had sex with, I was with him for a year.
Mm-hmm.
I had waited for him to tell me he loved me, so I just, you know, that was a very wonderful experience to me.
Yeah, that was
when
the way back then.
When my mother found out that I was having sex with Joey, she took me to the gynecologist and she said, okay, you know, this is what we do. And she got me on the pill. I mean, she was great, great about it, wonderful about it. So I've had, thankfully, a very, very happy, healthy, fun sex life.
And it should be noted that as miserable as both your parents could be and as brutal as both your father and mother could be, you were never sexually abused. You were physically and verbally abused.
No, was never. There was not an inkling of that. Not one iota, any of us. So that's something to be happy about, right?
Now, let me also ask about your dad, because he went from, as we've been saying, he went from just the little peep show things to the machines to all that, and then essentially creating pornography. Did he just produce? Was he a director? Did he make any movies that people have seen but won't admit?
Make movies for him.
Oh, So he was a producer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he had.
Well, did he do was he on the famous ones like Deep Throat or Green Door or any of those? Or
oh, I don't believe that. No. They were all just for his peep shows. He never.
Oh, he never did a feature. He never got into, you know, the.
Well, some of those peep shows were small little movies, but nothing famous. You know, he never did Deep Throat or anything like that.
Right. No, but peep show, you keep saying peep show, it's almost like it's going to be a 45-second loop of something as opposed to, a movie or a scene or something
That years ago, there were, in the machines, you could have shorter movies, but the movies that were 8-track, you know, those were, no, a lot of them were, 45-minute movies.
Oh, I didn't, okay.
Like
did not know that, because I'm thinking in terms of the movies that you would see on those old marquees in Taxi Driver, with De Niro and the pictures of New York in 1977. So they were mid-sized movies, they just weren't the ones that were up there on the marquee. But here's a question then. Did the video era destroy your father's business on some level? What happened after that era?
When it went, first of all, what destroyed Dad was Giuliani getting rid of all of the peep show places. I mean, Show World, funny, just closed in April. Playground is still there. But, my father had like 300 stores. Some of them he was renting to the mob. But, so that... That really affected it because, certainly now online where women are having cameras in their beds and people can just pay through credit cards and they can do all this stuff for a man in the privacy of his home, and being able to see it on the internet. My father didn't have the vision, although my brother, who unfortunately was working for him and my brother-in-law had said, Marty, we need to create a website. And, my father didn't know what the hell that meant. And, my father was, in a way, very cheap. He wouldn't even think of, I'm going to hire somebody to make this website. That would have been the smart thing to do. But that he wasn't going to put his money into.
When did your father die?
My dad died 4 years ago.
It was only because you're talking about websites, and my head is still back in like 1989 when people really wouldn't have thought about doing all that. So did he salt away enough money from what he made back in the heyday that you and the children are all protected and you've got a nest egg and stuff?
Well, he left us stuff. He left us money, but certainly not what you'd think because he had a second wife who was a goddamn horror. Just a horror. Here I was thinking, oh, maybe we'd finally have a mother figure. Well, she was into cocaine and drinking, and she just wanted all of his money. If my father gave us $5, taking my money. Arlene, there's plenty of money for everyone. So she got a lot of my father's money. She made sure that she spent a lot of that money. And when my brother hurt himself, she didn't even want my father to help him. She's a horror.
Horrible woman. What happened to your birth mom? We kind of left her hanging.
My mother divorced my father the second time he was in jail. I think I was around 33, 30, or 29. I don't remember all the dates. And he was devastated because no matter how crazy my mother was, my father loved her like crazy. But she couldn't handle him. He was abusive to all of us, really. Her, too.
And is she alive? Is she... or not?
She what?
Is she alive?
No, she died in 2004.
Oh, okay. I'm just curious about that. So, and then he remarried, and he married this horrible woman. Is Arlene still alive? Gewalt.
How do you know the name Arlene?
Because you just said it.
Oh, shit. Yes, unfortunately she is. In my book, I call her Andrea, but...
Oy, all right. Well, you can use a last name. Yeah.
And I really want somebody to, like, mail a book to her.
Well, you could if you could, you know.
Yeah, I could.
So here's the other deal. Like, before the death of your birth mom and before the death of your dad, was there ever a... I mean, you said you've stood up for yourself all through the years, and you protected your... But was there ever this moment where you really, maybe not physically, but you just laced into them when you were a grown-up and they were already old and useless?
Well, with my father... many, many times, you know, really horrible fights with my father, you know, many times. And I'll never forget, needless to say, I mean, I'm not a big fat slob, but I certainly have some issues with my weight and with the way that I look. I mean, it's a hell of a lot better. But I had lost like 20 pounds, and it was the holidays or whatever, and I came over to my father's place in Queens in the North Shore Tower. I walk in, and he goes, "Oh, my God, you look emaciated." And I just got up. I don't know what kind of language I can use on this show, but I got up, and I said, who the hell, you fat pornographer, don't you ever say anything about my body again. And he stood there with his eyes open. And I said, never, ever, ever do you say one thing unless it's, hey, you look gorgeous, you fat fucking pornographer. You know, I was like freaking out. And, you know, with my mother, you know, my mother had gone, my mother was insane.
Well, yeah.
You know, when you were there, you know, she was living in her, you know, she was agoraphobic for 30 years. She never went out of the house, rarely, you know, to a doctor's appointment or if one of us got married or something. So she created a life, this fantasy world for herself in the house. And
but did she ever go on medication at some point? You know, like when she married the second husband, she was able to find another husband. Did she get control?
My mother never married again.
He got the second wife. She divorced him, but she never, that's right, I'm sorry. But
she never married again. Dad did.
But did she ever get control of her chemistry?
No. Mm. No. She just did drugs, you know, like it was, you know, I mean, yeah. She would do, like, Percocet and Tylenol with codeine, like six of them.
So she was already the opioid crisis before we had an American opioid crisis. She was ground zero of opioids.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Now, here's my other question. I asked before if you ever got back, you know, you've got the revenge, you ever got that catharsis thing again. Why, the other question would have been, why not when you were 18 or 21, just leave them forever and never send them a card for the holiday. Just never talk to them or see them again.
Because I kind of became like the surrogate mother to my three siblings. Mm. Part of me wishes that I did do that, go run away to California or something and think about myself. You know, most of my life was worrying about my family. I mean, even in 2006, I took my sister Reese's two children for 3 years so she could get herself off of drugs.
Oh, well.
You know,
Yeah.
But so, I'm saying, you know, here I am at 61 years old starting a new career, and finally it's like, take care of yourself more than everybody else, Romola, you know?
Oh, by the way, let's make this happy. What is your new career? Is it as the author, or you also did some stuff with Natural Foods?
I had a business for close to 25 years selling amazing stuff to the natural food industry. I was a holistic practitioner for a while. I was broke, because who goes to a holistic practitioner 30 years ago? And then found my way into the natural food industry and just sold amazing things. You know, New Chapter, Mega Food, Haushka, just amazing things. And then in 2009, I left that. So now what I do is, besides being an author, I consult people and help them create a balanced and healthy relationship with alcohol, because many more of us problem drinkers than there are alcoholics. And in America, you know, you drink too much, you're an alcoholic, and that is not the case. So
you can be a problem drinker, like relying on alcohol for the wrong reasons, without being genetically predisposed to actually being an alcoholic.
Oh, yeah. Plenty of us, you know, go out and like, geez, I'm drinking 2 martinis 7 nights a week. Well, some people might not mind, and some people mind. Some people are like, geez, I would like to drink 2 martinis 3 nights a week. Or I remember working with a man. He drank a bottle of scotch every single night.
Gewalt.
And by the end of the year, he was drinking half a bottle of scotch every single night. And then he was drinking a quarter of it. You know,
it's like
you wean yourself. And he's very happy drinking 2 glasses of scotch every night.
How is that not an alcoholic?
Excuse me?
How is that not an alcoholic by American definition?
Well, he didn't consider himself an alcoholic, and he said, I can do this. I can learn to moderate. And he did. You know, many of the people that I work with that's an extreme situation that I was just telling you about. But if you don't think you're an alcoholic and you believe that you can learn to moderate and then you do it, that's a great thing. You know, I never considered myself an alcoholic. I was drinking close to a bottle of wine 7 nights a week for like 2 years. And I was like, something's not right here. You know, it wasn't stopping me from work. I wasn't waking up with too many hangovers, but you know, I didn't like doing that. It wasn't the way I wanted to live my life. And there's an organization called Moderation Management.
Oh, I like
MM,
that.
Just like, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went about 13 years ago. I went to meetings. I became a leader. I started my own groups.
And now I'm a consultant
here in Boynton and starting on Zoom. I mean, that's what I do. I go out and I do public speaking about my book.
Of course.
And then in some arenas, I'll talk about my story and how I got into drinking alcohol to get away from everything and what I did to learn to moderate it. And if anybody wants to learn, give me a buzz, you know.
Well, and is there a license that you have or something on the wall?
No. I just went through the schooling of moderation management. I became a leader of moderation management, and I have said to them, make a course. I mean, it's just like saying, if you're a leader in Alcoholics Anonymous, did you go to school? Well, you kind of went to the school of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know about the book, and you know about, you know, so you learned Alcoholics Anonymous. They don't have a course, just like MM doesn't have a course, but there's many you know, because I was a holistic consultant and I went through years of learning how to be a consultant.
You've got the chops.
You know, I know how to talk with people, and, you know, MM certainly teaches you how to be a leader. So I guess it's MM and, you know, I am certified as a holistic practitioner, so I just put all that together and it works.
Well, if people want to get in touch with you, either they want to buy your book, for sure, or they would like counseling, they would like a session. How do they do that?
Okay, to buy the book, you go to Amazon. Okay?
Well, that's
and if
easy.
You want to see my website for the book, it's Romola, R-O-M, like Mary, O-L-A.com. And if you're interested in learning about, you know, curbing some of your problem drinking, it's Creating Harmony, M-M,
yeah.
.com. So that's Creating Harmony, M-M. .com.
So that's one website for the drinking, and then for the book, of course, it's Romola.com. Now, I'm going to ask you about Romola, the name. You are Jewish. Your family, Marty Hogus, your dad,
yes,
Jewish.
Yes.
Is it Romola's an interesting name. Where did that come from?
So, do you know the Russian ballet dancer Nijinsky from like the 40s or 30s or something?
I don't know him personally. We didn't have
dinner together. Nijinsky, the Russian ballet dancer Nijinsky, married the Duchess of Romania, who was Romola.
Ah.
So my mother's mother, her name was Romola. And there's also an actress, I can't believe it, Romola Gaia something. She was in Vanity Fair with Reese Witherspoon and...
But I thought she was Irish-ish. It didn't strike me as a Jewy kind of a name, but it's a Russian-Jewish sort of a name. What is her Hebrew name, do you know?
Rivka.
Rivka! I love it.
Rivka.
Now, we're wishing everybody a happy Hanukkah this time of year. Can I ask,
yes. How
Jewish are you at this point, if at all? Just culturally, do you celebrate anything? Do you ever go to a Seder? What do you do?
Yeah, we had Seder every year. That's why this year is kind of hard being here in Florida. Mm. I used to have, you know, the family, 15 people over every year for Hanukkah, Passover.
Yom Ha'atzma'ut, let's not forget that one. That's a beautiful...
So I have to figure out, I think my neighbor's going to be lighting the candles, so I'll go over there.
Well, let me ask, how do you have any kind of relationship with God, considering how miserable your childhood was? Wouldn't you reject a God that puts you through all that year after year?
Well, I stopped believing in God because just that. I was like, how the hell could there have been? And I didn't even get into what happened from 2009 to 2016. But then I was like, you know, we are here on Earth to learn. And you might not understand what this universal energy is, you know, what your karma or whatever. But, you know, I couldn't, you know, every night before I go to sleep and every morning, I was just telling my friend this morning, I wake up and I say, God, whatever you are, you know, thank you for this day. I had a wonderful day. There was some really, really good things that happened today, even though it was shitty. You know, this morning I woke up looking at my dog. Thank you for my dog. I know this is going to be a good day. I feel you with me, you know, because I totally believe, you know, this. I don't know if this is going to sound weird or whatever, but when I was a holistic practitioner, I would do massage for stress release. And I started to learn about polarity and energy work or whatever, and I started to have energy come through me.
Okay.
And the people would get off my table going, what? Wow! You know, all I felt was love coming through you. And I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, if the energy of the universe is love, then so be it. So when you have that happen to you, when you actually know that you can just put yourself in a certain place and then this heat starts, it's not me. It's something bigger than me that I'm just able to channel, you know. So that is also another reason why I kind of believe that there's something out there. And then,
see, the only time that happens to me is when I sit on the microwave. That's about as close as I get. But let me ask you, you can't tease us, though. You can't just say, well, you know, I haven't even talked about what the hell happened between 2009 and 2016. All right, what the hell happened between 2009 and 2016? I mean, you were doing a successful Whole Foods business.
Well, 2009, my largest account, well, actually in 2008, my largest account got rid of me because they were alcoholics. and I was starting to work with Sephora and Bloomingdale's, and they didn't want to work that hard. So anyway, when I was on a vacation, they fired me and hired someone else. So that, number one, I was like, oh my God, $7,000 gone, and I had reps to pay. So the trip that I was on, I was with my husband, and that trip, I just knew my relationship was over. And it was awful for me because I stayed with him. I loved his mother, and I loved his father, and I loved his brother, and I loved his sister-in-law and the babies. They were my family, more family to me than my family. And I stayed with him. So anyway, so my marriage is over. My business is falling apart. A so-called friend introduces me to this man that I don't want to go through, but he starts to rob me. I go to the FBI. I see it. They tell me, you know, they couldn't tell me then everything that was going on, but there was already a case opened, and I found out later on when they arrested him, he robbed $10 million from all these different people. Finally, you know, caught him. Then the banks. So my business, I couldn't pick my business back up.
Right.
I was losing my husband, getting robbed, you know, trying to start another business when my brains are all over the place. You know, then the banks want me to pay 25 cents on the dollar of what he robbed. And I said, go to hell, I'd rather go bankrupt. How could you do this to me? I've been with you for 20 years. I went bankrupt at 50 years old. So my life is slowly, then, you know, I start another business with Affleck, and I'm, you know, I'm going to go ahead and make $20,000 on Wednesday. We already went to the two nursing homes. The Sandy storm comes, that freaky Sandy, and it closes the two,
the senior homes,
senior homes, and my brother shoots his face off and lives. And I was like, there's no way there's a God. How could he be doing this to me? How? You know, I became a bit agoraphobic. I couldn't go out. It was just too much for me living in Manhattan, going outside and doo-doo-doo-doo, you know, zillions of people. And I just kept saying to myself, Romola, you're going to live till you're 96. I don't know why this is happening, but you're going to be all right. Just keep on going, keep on going. And that is like what happened when my husband and I got divorced. Thank God he took care of me financially.
Nice.
I mean, he even paid an extra year when it was over because I couldn't function. He saw everything that was going on, and I am sure he felt guilty. Anyway, so...
Wow. And 2016 and then, was a watershed.
And I couldn't go to work because my brother... You know, my brother, he just, you know, it was just like a, you know, like a monster movie. And my father decided that my brother should want to die because he's not going to be able to see. I'm like, Dad, I understand that this is hard for you. He stopped my brother's insurance. They wanted to kick him out of the hospital on and up for 4 years. I'm fighting. I went through all of my money for my brother. Blah, 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 blah. So I was trying to save my brother's life as my brains are shattered all over the place. And finally, you know, when my father passed 4 years ago, we thought that the bitch lady was, she wanted all the money.
Right.
She wanted all the money. Thank God that there was a judge that said, I'm sorry, Mrs. Hodes, you pig. You're not going to make these children have no money. But for like a year and a half, we thought we were getting $250,000. We would all have to give that money to my brother so he could live. I mean, it was just awful, you know. So in 2016, I got a large sum of my inheritance, and I said, I'm out of here. I have to start a life after 8 years of being in hell. So I came to Florida.
This is where the Jews go. You turned 59, off you went. There you go.
So since I've been in Florida, life has really turned around, and
yay.
It's really very positive. It's just, you know, It's about 2 years of coming out of depression, and you know, so it's like I do my best to be, you know, easy on myself, because when you're trying to start a business and you're healing from all of that, it's challenging. But you know, what am I going to do? Sit and be a bad lady? Well, you know, I want to have a good life. So
and now
I am, pounding away, you know, trying to create a new career at 61 years old.
Well, with mazel with that, and hey, you know, you gotta get used to eating dinner at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You will. It's good. Dude, are you out there? Are you meeting any nice Jewish boys? Are you done with that?
No, I am not done with that.
I don't know. Okay.
You know, no. I mean, it's not so simple. It's so not simple. Let me tell you.
Even in Florida?
No, I'm waiting for God to say, okay, it's your time. You're going to meet in the, you know, supermarket. You know, evidently he has his thoughts, or she has her thoughts, because the people that are coming into my life are like, oy vey, another one. Are you kidding? You know, nice people, but just not right for me, because they just aren't. So,
well, that's...
I guess it's not my time. But I know in my heart, I really know in my heart, that somebody's out there. So I'm just being patient.
Well,
patient and pleading with God. Come on already.
Well, you're going to go on these, you're meeting more people through counseling. You're going on book tours, I'm sure. And you're going to start to meet more people from different walks of life, and not necessarily, you know, men with alligator skin from living in Florida for the past 8
That's
years.
That's right.
Yeah. Are you going to write another book, or is this out of you? What's
if this book, because I ended the book at 30 years old.
Right.
You know, the plan was to write another book, but this book has to make it first before I write another book. You know, so I would love to, and I also want to write a book about, you know, moderating your alcohol. I'd love to do that.
Well, you've got the computer, you've got Florida, you know, you've got the sunshine, the time. Start today. This is what you got to do. It's Ramola Hodes that we've been talking to. Her book is The Princess of 42nd Street from Riverdale Avenue Press. And you can get it all the usual ways, especially Amazon.com. You can find out more about her at Ramola.com. R-O-M-O-L-A. Ramola. .com. And also, it was, remind me of the other website for people who want moderation management, is what?
Right. CreatingHarmonyMM.com.
CreatingHarmonyMM.com. Well, it has been absolutely fascinating and often fun, even occasionally disturbing, talking with Ramola Hodes. But you're in Florida now, where all the Jews are. You're in a much better place, and I wish you to be in even better places in the many, many years ahead until you're 96 plus. Forget 96. You should live to 126. 127
Thank you.
Well, it's been a delight. Thank you, and shalom to you.